The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
If you're someone who lives in an area where it's so expensive to buy real estate and you feel like it's impossible, then I have something for you. I just released a free guide that's going to give you the 8 steps you need to take to buy your first out-of-state property. I've bought several properties out of state, living in California, investing in Ohio, and you can do the same. It's just a matter of having the right information. So click the link in the description of this episode to get your free guide today.
Welcome back to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Investor Spotlight. And today's episode features Nick Goucher and Crystal Denman from episode 153. Both of these incredible individuals know all about how to use smart leverage, how to finance your flips, and how to honestly, you know, take the conversation about gentrification and flip it on its head. So we're going to talk about what they have done to finance deals in the early six figures, right? Not the $1 million deals, but the early six figures. And so they give some really good insight. In particular, Crystal gives a really, really good layout of what she's done. And then Nick comes on the back and he gives a really good tip. So without any further ado, let's get back into it.
Crystal, we don't live in a city with $100,000 homes. And so how are you funding these flips? Because you're thinking about the acquisition cost, the cost to rehab, and all these holding costs, all these things. So what are some ways you're financing your flips?
Sure. So I usually finance my flips through primarily two methods, hard money loans and using private lenders to fill sort of that gap. And what I mean by the gap is lenders are not going to lend you 100% of the financing, especially if you're a first-time flipper. So at most, they're usually lending you maybe like 90% of the purchase and maybe 90% of the rehab or 90% of the purchase and 100% of the rehab, where you are then responsible for that 10% difference as well as any carrying costs. And another cost that I think a lot of flippers sort of forget to include is what I like to call that gas money, right? So even though the lender will give you, you know, 190% of the rehab, it works in terms of the draw. They're expecting you to do the work and then they'll reimburse you. So you're going to need to have money to fill that gap of that 10%, service the loan for however long you have to keep the project, as well as that sort of gas money to get the rehab started. So usually the private money lender will close that gap for me, and that's how I'm able to finance these projects. And I think a lot of times when we're in, you know, our market, we see these big numbers, you know, houses $500,000, $1 million, and it's still, then the roof is falling off. But I try not to let that buy number scare me. And look at it more in terms of what is the number that I need to for that gap. And that's usually about, like, on the smaller end, maybe like 75,000. If you're doing a larger rehab, it's maybe like, you know, more towards six figures. When you start to think about it like that, to me, it becomes a much more manageable number. It's less scary. Because we're looking at, you know, $100,000 in Detroit, St. Louis, or whatever, we're fine. Well, here, don't look at it as $500,000, $700,000. Just look at it, what do I need to bring to the table? And so I think when I try to change my mindset and sort of look at it like that, it became less scary to me and I felt more comfortable doing it.
Got it. Can you explain how you find hard money lenders and just what that is in case somebody may not know?
Sure. So a hard money lender, so we have our traditional big box banks like your Wells Fargo's, JP Morgan Chase and stuff like that. So hard money, huh? Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm just teasing. Go ahead. I'm just teasing. Go ahead.
We also have Legacy, which is black owned.
Check that box.
We check that box for right there. Hard money lenders, contrary to, you know, your conventional lenders, they care more about the asset versus your personal finance. So when you're trying to qualify for like a home or something like that, they care more about you, the borrower. What are your W-2s? How much money do you have saved in the bank? What is your FICO score? Whereas a hard money lender, they care less about you and more about the asset. And they are willing to, you know, lend on property that may not necessarily qualify for conventional financing. So normally your banks are going to want it to be somewhat livable condition. And sometimes some of these properties that we're purchasing as flippers, they're not going to qualify. So you're going to have to use hard money. So they're a little less stringent on their criteria as you as the borrower, less stringent on their criteria as you as the house itself. And it typically funds a lot quicker compared to traditional financing.
Got it. And you also mentioned private money. I have a problem asking somebody for $5, and you're talking about $75,000. So a couple of questions. How are you finding these private money lenders, and what's that conversation like to try to get these funds?
You know, it can be a tricky conversation, especially I feel like within our minority communities, talking about money isn't as easy of a conversation as it is for, you know, outside communities. But you'll be surprised, like, you know, Uncle Ray Ray at the barbecue who got the dingy t-shirt probably has, you know, $50,000 saved up and you don't really know it. So I think just sort of like having those conversations, talking about real estate, everybody is interested in real estate in some point because of how it's been popularized by the different TV shows and stuff like that. And I think everybody starts to want to like dip their toe in the water per se. And a lot of people aren't necessarily wanting to deal with tenants. Not everybody is interested in being a landlord. Not everybody is interested in dealing with contractors. So this is a way when you talk to people like, hey, you know, if you have some money, here's a way to get into real estate without having to deal with what I like to call the top five tenant toilets, trash, termites, and turnover. And you could get a consistent return that is not subject to the ups and downs of the stock market. It's secured by real estate. It's truly passive. You know, you're not dealing with people and stuff like that. And it becomes a easier conversation. People are, you know, kind of, it piques their interest. So that kind of is a way to sort of like, and once you kind of like show them like, hey, these are my plans. This is how much I plan to buy it. This is how much I plan to rehab it for. This is my profit even after I pay you. People are usually kind of like open to sort of, you know, having a conversation. So.
Love it, love it. And we also are in a competitive market. We all know that. My wife and I, we saw a property near where we live. It was a 4-unit building. And we just inquired, we're like, you know, we'll check it out. We'll go inside. We'll see it. We spoke to an agent. Within like 24 hours, there are 14 offers. They're not showing the property anymore. They're, you know, negotiating with different people, countering, whatever. What are some ways people can get their offers accepted? I guess, Crystal, for your standpoint, to get into like flipping, and then Nick, from your standpoint, either to have it as an investment or as a primary residence. And Nick, we could start with you.
I don't know, for me, I get most of my deals off market. So I usually talk directly to sellers. I don't do a lot of on-market purchases simply because I don't like that person in the middle. I just like kind of directly communicating with the person. And with that, I'm sort of able to see what they really want in terms of not only price. Some people, there's other things that are important to people that, you know, obviously people want price, but some people, there's other things that are important to them in how you structure the offer. So you could try to meet them with their price, but also maybe they need to find another place. And I might put in my offer, all right, I'll release, you know, 20 grand from escrow so that you could use that money to go find you another place. I think really for me, when I'm trying to find, you know, property off market, not communicating with the seller beyond the price and seeing what they really want out the deal to make my offer stand out to them, because that's what they want.
Yeah. One, he gave the example of Leimert Park. You got to realize places like Inglewood, Leimert, Bowen Hills, View Park, you have to understand what you're priced against, because you have people who live in Westchester and in Culver City who might sell their home for, I mean, a property today in Westchester, right? A two-bedroom, two-bath might be $1.9 million. But that same property in View Park is 1.7 with a view of the whole entire city. They sell the property, they're going to bring $1 million to buy the asset when you're a first-time home buyer wanting to go FHA, right? Or they might have all cash. And so there are some markets that are hotter than others, but real estate, by and large, is a local game. And so if you look at it across the country, I mean, like, I think it was in September, Zillow's reported that like 27% of all listings dropped their price, right? And so there are some, one of the properties that I actually sold, I had to drop my price because I had the property initially, for example, I was going to put it on the market in December when rates were like 3.5%. And it was, that property was $675. I said, I'm going to, you know, hold it. Then the market went up. I said, I think I'm going to sell it. But when I decided to put it back on the market in June, rates were now six. So that person who was going to buy the property, they can buy it at $675 because a payment at 4% is much more affordable than a payment at 6.5%. Does that make sense? And so some markets are more competitive than others. But by and large, I would say if you are going to sweeten the deal, trying to get the offer accepted, what we're seeing across the country, this works, and also in LA as well, is one, if you increase the down payment, if possible. The seller thinks that the thought is if you have more capital put down, you are better risk, or you're a better chance of closing on that property because you got more money for a down payment. Number one. Number two, we're seeing people who might change their loan program. So if you qualify for FHA, there's sometimes misconceptions that FHA means you're a less qualified person because they will let you go and buy with a lower credit score. But if you went, let's say, conventional, they look at that as a more qualified buyer. So the seller's thinking to themselves, if I have these people over here, right, are you 14 of you, and you guys all give me your file, and whoever has the highest credit score and the highest down payment, I think is most likely to give me the money to close on the actual home. And so those things can happen.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.